Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Same result, different sides, keeper goes the wrong way. What a huge shock we have potentially on the cards here on the opening weekend of the WSL. But Sam Kerr into the Liverpool penalty area, Fahy goes down. The referee blows the whistle. A record-breaking weekend of attendance, arguably being capped by one of the biggest shocks in WSL history. Newly promoted Liverpool have beaten Chelsea, the five-time Super League winners.
Shots down by Villar and Daly will curl. What a goal! The star signing off the mark for Aston Villa.
Play on for Blackstenius. It's Blackstenius finds the top corner. Ruthless from Stina Blackstenius.
Welcome to Up Front. I'm Chloe Morgan.
And I'm Rachel O'Sullivan.
After waiting a week longer than planned, the WSL is finally back, baby. And what a weekend to get us underway. Upsets galore, loads of goals, and some lionesses picked up right where they left off. We're getting stuck into all of that on today's bumper review pod, and we're joined by a very, very special guest.
Drum roll, please.
Massive drum roll. Can we drum roll?
Will that get picked up?
Yes. In the form of freelance women's football writer and broadcaster, Jessie Parker Humphreys, the legend. Welcome, Jessie.
Is it bad I drumrolled myself?
No, no, that's all right. That could have been me. If you hadn't said that, no one would have known.
I felt wrong. Like I had to admit it. No. It would have been disingenuous.
Absolutely, there's nothing wrong with self-hype at all.
We never do that.
No.
We never self-hype.
Yeah, no. Love yourself, eh?
Ever.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is a women's football podcast. We can fucking self-hype ourselves, can we not? All incredible people and around the game. Come on.
Smashing it.
Yeah.
We've clearly smashed this intro as well. We've just completely gone off the rails.
No, that's not like us.
We don't do that.
Never.
No.
It's a very tight ship here.
Yeah, yeah.
I've got that impression all day.
Have you actually? How does it feel to be in the hot seat today?
Yeah, I'm excited. I was saying before this, I've never done an in-person podcast because I only started podcasting like during and post COVID.
Of course.
Wow.
So this is really exciting. I thought podcasts just lived for little heads on Zoom.
Yeah.
Apparently real life people do them too.
How does it feel about the table, the seat, the studio?
Mm.
I mean, the main thing I'm noticing is that my feet are very far off the floor. These chairs are very big.
You're literally
and
levitating.
I'm very small.
Yeah.
Levitating, yeah.
Yeah, we shouldn't have. I mean, we should have probably got you a little bit lower down.
No, I like it.
No, you like that feeling, that kind of authority. Yeah, from
we like our guests to feel like they're on a throne.
Absolutely.
That's what I'm getting.
That's the vibe.
And it's also really refreshing, actually, that we don't have a Spurs squad member or member of staff in that chair. It's just really refreshing just to have a new perspective. Do you know what I mean?
I'm about as far away as something you can get related to Spurs as possible, I think.
Different kit today. What kit are you wearing?
Yeah.
I am wearing the Ajax third kit because I am going to Arsenal Ajax tonight with Victoria Pilova's name on the back.
Nice. Bringing the gold vibes into the studio today. I really like that.
Yeah, you know, I thought I'd spice it up.
Well, you've picked a fantastic time to come into the studio. I mean, obviously the first weekend of the WSL, it has been a screamer. The upsets, the kind of the goals scored, the penalty decisions. It's been a dramatic first weekend.
Has much happened?
Yeah, I mean, did you watch it?
Yeah, no,
get
I did.
Many
yeah.
of the games?
It was ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous.
You couldn't have written some of those things. And I think it makes us look a little bit silly with some of the predictions that we might have made.
No,
the
it
start.
Doesn't. No? Let's just focus on the ones we got right and not the ones we got wrong.
It's
right.
A long season, guys.
Yeah.
It is a long season. And it's the first weekend. So, I mean, we did have a bit of conspiracy theory. We thought maybe potentially with the WSL being pushed back by one week and some of the fixtures that should have taken place, maybe things would have panned out differently. Any kind of...
Maybe.
Yeah?
The passing of the Queen has potentially changed the outcome of the WSL. Imagine.
The course of the WSL has been changed by the death of...
Do you think she was a fan of the WSL? I heard Kelly Smith say that when she got her OBE or MBE off her, the Queen had been like, oh, is it very like physical playing football? So
she's obviously watched it.
Queen
Lizzie knew. She knew it was a very physical game. Yeah. So yeah,
spicing
I love
it up a bit. We love that.
Yeah, she was at the forefront of women's football. So it was. So we're just going to jump straight in there. Not say anything too controversial here. But we've got to start with the big one. Obviously, Jessie, you happen to be a Chelsea fan, so I'm probably going to start with you because. Didn't really go your way this weekend, did it? Things could have gone better, shall we say. I wouldn't call it necessarily an upset because I think, you know, we had the pod last week. I thought that Liverpool, you know, weren't going to be the kind of ones, even though they'd come up from the Championship this season, they weren't going to be ones that we thought we were going to be really worried about. They'd recruited really well over summer. And I think their recruitment really did wonders for them. So
I'd call it an upset. I wasn't worried about Liverpool getting relegated. But I don't think I would have called Liverpool beating Chelsea, being newly promoted. I think it's an upset, especially with the squad Chelsea has. I mean, you know, Jesse, you can tell us the way the game actually panned out, I guess, for listeners who weren't watching it. Three penalties. That's what it came down to.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, Chelsea scored their penalty in the third minute. And honestly, at that point, I was like, sweet.
You know, I don't need to watch anymore. It's clearly going to go my way.
Pretty much. And then it all went horribly wrong. So that serves me right for being so hubristic early on in the WSL season. Two Liverpool penalties in the 67th and 87th minute. But it was just a really strange one, really, because to be honest, Chelsea just didn't kick on in the way that you would have assumed they would have done, taking a 1-0 win, 1-0 lead. And I think the thing that maybe concerns me about it, and the reason I do think it isn't upset, is because we've seen Chelsea fumble against smaller teams in previous seasons. Reading last year, Brighton's our classic. But we don't normally go ahead and then give it up.
That was a stat they kept saying, the commentary kept referring to, was that every time, you know, Chelsea go ahead, they go on to win the game. And like, I can't remember how many games it was, but it was some crazy stat. And also when Chelsea tend to slip up, say your Reddings or your Brightons, it's often a really frustrating game for them because they are just battering the goal and can't seem to put the ball in. Mm-hmm. But as Emma Hayes said, you can hit a barn door on Sunday. 8 shots, 4 on target. That's not what we expect from Chelsea.
But I guess, is it what we expect from Chelsea when it's the opening game of the season? Because we've only won one of our last 5 season openers.
At least against Arsenal, though, you had 2 goals from open play, didn't you?
Yeah, that's
so
true. And it was against Arsenal, which yeah. is slightly more acceptable, I think, to lose than maybe Liverpool.
Do we think then that the kind of penalties have completely destroyed this game for Chelsea then? Do we think actually they didn't come out with all guns blazing?
I just don't think they came out with all guns blazing. We were talking about this earlier. There was a late change. Harder had been named in the starting 11, picked up a niggle in the warm-up and was replaced by Sophie Ingle, who is traditionally a deeper midfielder, maybe not as creative as Harder would be and doesn't go forward as much as Harder would. So we were talking about, did that kind of shift the lineup slightly? Did they give them less maybe creative opportunities that they would normally have? But then when you look at the players, those players on the pitch, there should be goals and opportunities coming from them.
But I will say for me, the one big turning point in the match is Sam Kerr's goal being yep. disallowed for offside. Yeah. I think if that counts, we're talking about
game changer.
A totally different,
yeah.
different game here. And like, look, these things happen. Like, I'm not super pressed about it. It's You're a sure? shame because
You're sure?
I was for like 3 hours mm-hmm. or so. And now I'm getting over
Let
I'm,
it. Go.
I'm mainly annoyed because sometimes when a goal is that good, you just want it to be allowed to stand.
Like, what regardless. A screamer that would have been. Yeah. And to be honest, Kirby's I don't pass, think it's offside.
Body. It's not offside.
Yeah.
But I can understand, like, look, humans are humans. I can see why it wasn't given.
But also it kind of started all this conversation about VAR again, but we didn't even have the right camera angles. So even if we had VAR, there was no definitive angle where you could draw a line across and say definitely wasn't onside or offside. I saw a number of shots being used, I think from Sky, I think it was, or was it BBC, but, and it was all from the front because we just didn't have the right. So the VAR conversation, I understand, but even then, I'm not sure it would have provided the definitive answer you wanted.
I think no. the frustration comes from when we know referees in the WSL still aren't full time.
Yes.
You're always going to have that question of being like, feeling like the standard could be higher because it could.
Mm-hmm.
It would be higher if they were full time. And before we even get into the VAR conversation, we've got to do that step first,
yeah.
right?
Yeah. Kelly Chambers was frustrated about the refs after Reading's game against Man United. And it's a shame the same thing happened last season. The conversations are about referees in the first weekend. And it's just, yeah, it's frustrating, isn't
Chelsea
it?
Chelsea offsides in opening weekends. What oh, yeah. is up with that?
But also, that's a pretty bold game for a referee to be making 3 penalty calls. So you've got to give her some credit, right?
Oh, no, I think from the penalty call decision, she was consistent throughout all 3 penalties. And, you know, I understand the calls for the penalty against Millie Bright being soft or unfair. And I agree, it's shit, but it's the rules. And if the rule needs to change, maybe that's what should be looked at rather than, you know, the arms were up away from her body. And yes, it's where she meant to put her arms. But the ref was consistent in terms of, I thought, calling the penalties. And the first one and the third one were nailed on pens for me.
I did think that was a bit of a savage call with the Millie Bright thing. Because I think, I mean, she was about a foot away from the ball. So I don't think she even saw the ball before it hit her.
And it's
her.
Like practically her armpit as
it,
well.
Yeah, it just hit her in the sort of like top of the shoulder. And I thought, oh,
I thought it was her upper arm.
It was a bit.
But like, change the rules. Yeah. If a player is like, if it's too close. And then the other thing is, you would benefit from VAR then because you'd need to go back and look at it and say, where did it hit her in the arm? And it's just another, we don't have that in the game. So...
But again, ultimately, at the end of the day, Chelsea should have had more than enough quality, I think, still to beat this Liverpool team.
Absolutely.
And the referee stuff almost becomes a distraction, right, from the question of why did Chelsea create so little?
And credit to Liverpool. I thought defensively they set up very, very well in terms of trying to minimise those chances. I do think they deserve credit for the result, especially going down so early in the game. You know, you'd be forgiven for heads dropping. But with a manager like Matt Beard on the sideline, they've recruited well in terms of WSL experience. But they're even missing players like Shanice van der Sanden. Like, they're missing big names. And unfortunately, Leanne Kiernan went off with what looks like a pretty nasty injury, which
is
a real shame.
Dragging her foot across the floor, and I was like, oh God.
Get the stretcher, guys.
Yeah, I thought that was a bit savage, wasn't it?
But I'm really sad for her because she's had such bad luck with injuries, and she was finally back in flying form. Brilliant for Liverpool last season. And it looks like she could be out for a while. And I'm also, you know, I've already got my Ireland hat on and I think she'll miss the upcoming matches for them as well. So really sad for them.
Well, I think, that brings up an interesting point, doesn't it? Chelsea weren't firing on all cylinders, but also, I mean, Liverpool start to the season. Obviously, from there, they come the championship. They were winning game after game after game, recruited really well. Matt Beard picking up manager of the year, you know, fantastic new signings. And you kind of look at the strength and depth of that squad, and I don't really feel like they had an incredible game at the weekend. It wasn't incredible, but also, do you think that that's going to sort of boost their confidence going into the season now? Do we think that actually they're going to run on this and think, well, if we can take down a Titan, you know, where are we going to go from here?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, who doesn't want to beat Chelsea, right? Like, understandably.
Everyone does.
Yeah, of course.
I would like to beat Chelsea. I'd like to play against Chelsea again and beat them.
Chelsea have won the WSL title 3 seasons in a row.
They're the titan you want to take down.
Of course. Mm. But I think the other thing is I think it's a confidence boost for Liverpool because I feel like it will justify what they probably think about themselves internally, which is that they are a team who could finish top half, I think.
Do you reckon?
I think so. I think they've got the quality there in terms of the players they've got, the manager they've got. He's, you know, huge amounts of experience in WSL. He's won the bloody thing twice with Liverpool. So I think it makes me laugh when there's been a lot of stuff about Chelsea losing to a newly promoted team because they are newly promoted, but it's not quite the same as what losing to Leicester would have looked like.
Or losing to Birmingham. No, you know, I think we talked about in the first podcast that we weren't worried about them getting relegated and they're kind of proving why. But we've also talked about the importance of those opening couple of matches. And for Liverpool to beat Chelsea, to look at a game that they probably looked at and said, right, that's one we're probably not going to get points from, but we'll probably get points from these, and these. To get points so early on, and then they're going into Merseyside derby next weekend against Everton, who lost at the weekend. Their confidence is going to be so high, especially playing in front of a massive, what will likely be a big crowd in their main stadium. Like, it's going to give them even more confidence going into that match.
Do you think they were shocked? Do you think they were shocked at the result? Do you think they were looking at that thinking, oh, actually, we could get something from this at least? Or do you get the impression that they were thinking, oh, no, actually?
Probably. I think they probably were like, oh my God, we're going to get a draw out of this. This is amazing. Mm-hmm. Like, genuinely think, especially when that second penalty came, it came from Chelsea, like, being camped in Liverpool's half. Like, that's the back pair, Eriksen and Bright, were so high up the pitch. And it came from a bounce that Eriksen didn't meet. Shouldn't have let it bounce, and Stengel got in. It was Buchanan and Eriksen up quite high. So they were so far up the pitch for the second goal to ultimately come from Chelsea having possession and being camped in there. It's probably quite a surprise, yeah.
Mm. And I think, looking at sort of some of the comments that Emma Hayes was making, obviously you mentioned there before that the team couldn't hit a barn door, which is obviously very openly critical of the squad. She's obviously not happy with the way things have gone. And, you know, in classic Emma Hayes fashion, I mean, she sets the bar really high and they obviously fell behind that. Do you kind of feel like, you know, she was expecting more from the squad, or do you think that actually this isn't going to be, it's not going to phase her too much? This is just a blip in her otherwise incredible record.
Both. I personally think Emma Hayes has a lot to answer for this game.
Oh, you're blaming the Hazy.
I will put a lot of blame at Hayes' door on this, yeah, rather than the squad, because look, we're never going to know how Chelsea lined up if Pernille Harder had been fit.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the choice to bring Ingle in was a mistake. And I don't know if players were going to play where they ended up regardless, but Lauren James at right wing back makes no sense to me. We signed an international quality fullback this summer, supposedly to deal with our fullback, wing-back positions. Why are we then playing Lauren James there? Guru Wrighton ended up in this kind of weird front two with Sam Kerr. She just spent last season being really good at left wing-back. Well, we've now put new Charles. Like, sometimes I get that Emma Hayes likes to constantly reinvent herself and her Chelsea team, and that's part of the reason she's been able to have so much success over a decade where lots of managers would have got stale. But sometimes you don't have to reinvent the wheel, you know?
I agree.
Stick to the winning formula, essentially.
I think, because we've talked in the past about the players that Emma Hayes has and how she makes them fit into the squad. And I think last season we were starting to see her figure out the best areas for those players. And now that so many other new players have come in that need to start, like your Buchanans and players like that, it's almost like she's re-figuring out where to fit in all these players. We were talking about it earlier. There's so many potential number 10s in that team, and she seems to want to play all of them. You know, like, to have potentially Kirby, Harder and James all on the pitch at the same time, who would traditionally play that number 10 role. And you said earlier, Aaron Cuthbert was, you know, originally a number 10, also on the pitch. So there is an element of, like, trying to figure out how all these pieces fit together. And they did have a pretty decent preseason in terms of the teams they played. I know not all of the squad were back. I would have expected more in terms of, I'd expect them to be further ahead, say, than Liverpool when it came to the start of the season.
And that's what was strange, I think, about the team, because it was so different to the teams that had been sent out in preseason against Lyon, Portland, Tottenham. And that's why I think maybe the harder thing made Hayes just lose her head a little bit in what she decided to do and rip stuff up.
Well, I think, and you also touched on the point, I know where we spoke sort of pre-pod, that you sort of raised some concerns there about Magda Eriksson. Not to throw you under the bus here, but but yeah, you did say that maybe, you know, she didn't look as strong as she was before. Obviously, she had the injury and maybe not recovered to sort of pre-injury standard. Do you think that sort of had an impact on last week's performance, or this Sunday's performance?
Listen, I think when Chelsea signed Khadija Buchanan, there was a big question about what does this kind of mean for Magda Eriksson and Millie Bright, because they've kind of been the stalwarts of the Chelsea defence. Yes, Chelsea have been kind of playing a back three, but how did you fit Khadija Buchanan in that if you were going to play it? Is it something Chelsea still wanted to do? And Magda Eriksson, I think, is a player who, you know, she had that injury in December of last year, and it feels like she's not quite come back to the level. And I think that's partly because as soon as she came back, she was thrown into Chelsea, then the Euros. Now she's, you know, back in against Chelsea. Meanwhile, Chelsea chopped and changed their defence at the end of last season. Sweden chopped and changed their defence during the Euros. And now she's back with a whole new player playing next to her. So I think there's a lot of factors going on there. But I think to me, it feels quite clear that right now, we're not seeing the Magda Eriksson that we saw, say, at the start of last season.
Injury came at the worst possible time, it seems, because she was out for a while. And I'm sure in the back of her head, she's thinking, getting to the tail end of the season, ending up in the FA Cup final, getting to the tail end of the season where you're a point ahead of Arsenal, whatever, you know, it's so close. And you've got the Euros coming up. You want to be back on that pitch, don't you? Oh. It gives you very little time to actually fully recover and maybe have the summer off that you need. Because she got injured previous season. And I'd say that kind of summer, oh no, they went to the Olympics as well, didn't they? So there's just no recovery
just
time for these players.
Football.
We've got a World Cup next summer. Like, when do these players get the full recovery time they need?
You two are being very diplomatic and very understanding of a sort of not come back to full capacity Eriksson, which I love. I mean, I think
it's just hard to know, right? That's how I feel right now. Like, because, you know, she is approaching the end of her 20s.
Being nice, we've got some 30 somethings in the booth.
She just turned 29, right?
Gosh,
that's
whoa.
Approaching the end of your 20s.
Whoa.
I'm just saying, you know, you lose speed, physicality, right? We know that.
Just like that. Oh, birthday comes and it's all gone.
Whoa.
It's fine, guys.
Thank God I retired last year. I mean,
us 30-year-olds are going to need to be wheeled out of this studio.
That's why we've got
30-year-olds and 33.
Chairs.
Like, honestly, trying to like take some years off my age. Turn 34 next week. Jesus.
Right. Moving swiftly on from that very controversial end to that point. I mean, another upset, another very dramatic game. You know, a goalkeeper masterclass, really, in Aston Villa, Man City. Not the result that we all expected, but maybe we did. I mean, we did sort of touch briefly on the fact that Man City hadn't had, you know, a very strong season at the start of the season last season. Obviously, we've always been a little bit critical of old Gazza Taylor. And I felt there was some concerns, you know, the amount of big signings, Kira Walsh, Stanway leaving, you know, Jill Scott retiring, all these kind of big names that were leaving the squad, was it going to leave them vulnerable? And to be fair, I think I might have got this one right.
No, here we go. Crowing
no.
again.
What? No, what?
To be fair, though, we were worried about Man City, weren't we?
Yeah.
And Villa have recruited well. I didn't quite expect this. Mm-hmm. I'd say Man City probably said, first weekend's postponed. We don't have to play Arsenal. Oh, no. we're going to have to start against Villa. And holy shit, like, did Villa turn up?
They got dailied.
Oh my God.
They got dailied.
I love that. But it was something pre-match on the press conference. I think it was someone asked about Rachel Daly and the fact that she obviously plays fullback for England, but up front for in America. And Carla Ward basically said, Rachel Daly is nowhere near a defender in Villa. She is like absolutely a forward.
I mean,
and
she
my
definitely
God,
proved that point.
Did she show up?
Yeah. I mean, the two of those goals, I mean, the goals themselves.
The first one.
Oh, depend on that.
It's just, it was a thing of beauty. I mean, even the angle of it, the curve.
She almost had like her back kind of to goal almost. She wasn't even really properly looking at the goal.
Her hips, her body, her head and her feet were in different directions and she still scored.
She scored a similar one for England though, right? Ahead of the Euros. A volley kind
a volley.
Of like that.
Yeah. So she definitely got it in her locker. We know that from how she played over in the NWSL. But what I was really impressed with was Aston Villa's press. And I know a lot of the time we talk about the difference, the gulf in teams about big name players, and that's what the gulf is. I think a lot of the time, some of the big areas that they lack, the teams lower down, is fitness. Mm-hmm. And they don't have the same level of fitness necessarily as you'd see in your top traditional top four. I don't feel like we saw that with Villa. They were bloody fit. They pressed Man City for much of that 90 minutes. They did a really good job of trying to close off options to their wingers. So I was really impressed. I think Man City have always looked vulnerable when pressed, but a lot of teams used to seem quite afraid of Man City, and they didn't press them. They'd kind of sit back. And you see now when you press that back line that they are vulnerable. And I think Villa showed that this weekend.
Villa definitely did their homework. And I think I was really impressed by Lehmann, because I thought there was a couple of opportunities that she had, which were basically just pouncing on defensive mistakes. And it was from that very high, intense press. And, you know, there were so many mistakes in that game defensively. And also you've got to mention the big goalkeeping error, which has obviously given them that win. And I just, I think that was one thing that I just wasn't expecting from Villa, really. I don't know what I was expecting. I was expecting something a little bit flatter.
4-3?
Yeah.
Like, that's ridiculous.
That was 30% of the goals they scored last year.
Yeah.
They scored
yeah.
13 goals in the entirety of last season. And they scored 4 against Manchester City.
Yeah, that's pretty big.
Carla War, man.
Hats Hero.
Off. Already.
MBE pending,
maybe. Manager of the season.
Could be. I mean, if they're in for the title battle this year, we might be
Villa Champions League.
Can you imagine? We called it here first, up front, Villa Champions League, third spot, maybe title contenders. But no, I mean, there was a couple of, you know, big. I've got to touch on it as a goalkeeper, as an ex-player. Not good enough from both goalkeepers. And I don't know whether, you know, in terms of Roebuck, obviously she's, Jesse, you mentioned before, like obviously she's not played over the summer. She's had a bit of a quite a couple of months, but you know, Hampton failing to sort of claim a really, really safe ball, Roebuck going down for a barrier, letting it spill out, and then obviously that conversion of the was it the fourth goal by that point? Yeah. And I just didn't think it was good enough all round, really. So that was my thoughts on the goalkeepers. Yeah. Not good enough, mate. And also, you know, I love shouting out about goalkeepers. You know how I feel about goalkeepers union.
We do.
But I can't say anything positive about that, really.
To be fair, at least for Ellie Roebuck, there were enough Man City players who covered themselves in even less glory that it's one of the
you weren't the
worst.
You were the least bad.
Steph Horton just kind of passing the ball to Kenza Dali, like just outside the area, was a particular highlight for me.
Yeah, I think we've touched on the Man City defence being a little bit shaky and nervous under pressure, and to then take away Ciara Walsh and not have that kind of comfort blanket or safety blanket in front of you. Mm. It just leaves them exposed, and I just don't feel like that hole was dealt with by Gareth Taylor. It just felt like they were trying to play like they had Ciara Walsh on the pitch.
I mean, for me, the player who I thought they were really missing was actually Lucy Bronze, because I thought Villa got so much joy down with Kirsty Hansen down that left-hand side.
Yep.
Esme Morgan, like, look, she had a horrific injury. She's kind of coming back, but it's a big hole to fill. And, you know, I watched Barcelona this weekend as well, and you just looked at Lucy Bronze kind of bawling out in Spain, and then Esme Morgan kind of floundering against Kirsty Hansen. I just thought, it's a lot. It's not just Ciara Walsh. It is Bronze, Stanway, Weir, you know.
Yeah.
So do we think this result's then going to be indicative of sort of struggles going forwards, or do we think this is just a blip and they just need to, you know, they've brought on board a fair few new players, that's going to take time to gel, they've lost a lot of big names, there's a bit of a lack of confidence in City, what with the weak start last year and then just about climbing back for that Champions League spot?
I think what would be worrying for City is Villa would be a game they'd have identified as getting points, right? I think they kind of accept that when they play your Chelsea's, your Man United's, your Arsenal's, they might not necessarily guarantee a win. I don't think anyone's guaranteed a win in this league anymore. But I think what's worrying for them is to lose in the fashion they lost so early on. And if they play like that against Chelsea when they're on their day, or Arsenal on their day, that could be, you know, we saw them lose 5-0 to Arsenal last season. We didn't think we'd really see that again. But yeah, there's quite a few things they need to be working on. And Gareth Taylor really needs to think about playing the best for the players he has rather than like trying to fill the players that have left. Mm-hmm. I think it's just...
That's the big thing. Yeah. You know, for me, like, Alexandri, I think she had a mixed game, but ultimately the main problem was she was being played as if she was Ciara Walsh. That is not Ciara Walsh. That is a central defender who you're repurposing as defensive midfielder. That's fine. She can probably do a job for you, but you need to change the way you play out from the back, what things you're looking to do in possession, because she's not just going to be able to kind of turn and use her body and create the space and pick out the passes in the way Walsh did.
Yeah, because he did reference that in his pre-match press conference, was that they have Alexandra who can play in that position. They have Yui Hasegawa who can play in that position. And it's that thing of, we can take a player from their normal position and put them in that position. And I just, that's never a great way to start, is it? Yui Hasegawa, I think, is an absolute gem of a signing. She was injured. She didn't make the game. So that's a shame. But I just think he needs to forget about Kira Walsh and just put a team together with what he has, rather than thinking about how can the people I brought in replace and continue to play the way we played last season.
Yeah. Well, then do we think then that Gareth Taylor's potentially on the line? I mean, we sort of saw last season, obviously not starting great, but like I think we said before, I think this was around January, February time, obviously that City had a whole host of injuries. They were dealing with that at the time. We thought, oh, once the squad's back to full fitness, this is going to be Gareth Taylor's kind of the real testament to what he can actually do. But do we think then that there are further questions going to be asked now about whether he's...
No.
No.
I don't think so.
It just feels,
I think,
like City don't care.
I think if you let so many diehard City players leave, something's not right. I don't think something's quite right there to see so many of those players leave. And the answer is to just let them leave and bring in new players. I think Taylor's all right. I think he'll be all right for the season. Unless, like, Jesus, they're bottom of the league by Christmas. But I think he'll be okay. I think they're pretty loyal to him.
Yeah, and I think they've got an investment in him, right? Because he is a City manager. And I think that makes a big difference that, you know, they've kind of moulded him as a manager. He was with the under 18 boys. Now he's with the women. Presumably he wants to kind of do the Nick Cushing thing and go off and manage at one of their other million clubs that they have around the world. And I think that creates a different relationship with the club than if it was just an external person.
If you were like Everton and you were like, oh, haven't won your first three games, bye.
So they do like doing that.
It's a very different approach.
But it's bizarre because you look at the money City spend, like they spent six figures on Hasegawa. Like they're clearly willing to put money in. But for me, it feels like they've got like a, I don't know, like a technical director who just only turns up for the summer and then turns off for the season. And then is like, okay, who's left? Like, we'll bring him. Because the signings are great, you know. Like Mary Fowler's like one of the most highly rated players, like young players in the world. On the recruitment side, I can't fault them. But it's just like no one watches then what goes on the pitch.
Yeah. Yeah, agreed.
All right. Well, you heard it here first, Gareth Taylor. You're safe, mate, for the rest of the season. But after that,
we'll be totally wrong.
But we'll see what happens, all right? Eyes are on you, all right? Don't forget it.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
All right, so leaving it there and just sort of maybe moving on to something a little bit less controversial, which is pretty hard to find actually this weekend. So moving on to Arsenal-Brighton. Arsenal ran away with a bit of a 4-0 lead. It was the first time I'd really seen Hurtig fit into the mix. But, you know, for me, that kind of three-way partnership between Mead, Miedemar and Blackstenius was absolute gold. I mean, everyone just seemed to be flowing in the right way. I mean, the goal creation was coming from all different angles. The cutbacks, I mean, you know, I felt like Brighton were completely and utterly ripped apart. I didn't think they knew what was going on.
I love that you call this a less controversial topic, given there's a red card currently being investigated about whether it should or shouldn't have been, which is hilarious. But that
slightly
was like
less controversial.
The least controversial. the less bad. But to point out, Brighton did have Kohlberg sent off in the 7th minute, which is being appealed by Brighton because Blackstenius was offside in the lead up to that. There is some confusion about whether she was clipped or not. In my opinion, from the replays, she did get her heel was clipped by Kohlberg's shin, which then caused her to kind of hit her own foot and fall over, whereas everyone just seems to think she tripped herself up. I think she was caught, but Blackstenius was offside. So that's that was unfortunate for them. And what was interesting was Jonas Eidevall said in the first 7 minutes, he didn't feel like they'd actually prepared for the way that Brighton had come out. So there was some interesting, like Kaylee Green was like back in fullback position or something. It was bizarre. But he said they didn't really prepare for that lineup. And actually, when the red card happened and the way that they ended up setting up, they were like, okay, actually, this is more what we were expecting. I also felt like, yes, we talk about the link-up plays. There were some beautiful passages of play, but they still don't look as sharp as they would normally be. Like they still kind of look like a first game. And that's quite frightening because a couple more games under their belt, that trio, like there's a Miedema cutback for Beth Mead, and the commentator was like, oh, you know, she saw her coming in and cupped it back. She didn't see her coming in. There's no way she saw her in her side vision. Beth Mead wasn't even in the camera angle, like by the time, like when you watch it back, she's not even in shot. Miedema just kind of knew telepathically, and you've seen that with Blackstenius as well. There is a lot more telepathy between the players, which I think was starting at the end of last season, especially with Blackstenius. So I think as the season goes on, that's only going to improve.
Yeah, and for me, a player who actually really stood out, who we haven't mentioned, was Caitlin Ford, who I thought, I mean, listen, she was up against Georgia Fox, who's on loan from Chelsea at Brighton, and what a nightmare way to have to start the WSL season with, like, losing your defensive partner so early on. But I don't know if Arsenal, like, targeted her, but it felt like Caitlin Ford was a lot more willing to, like, try and take her on one-on-one and showed a different side to her game, I thought, than what we've seen before, a bit more of that more direct dribbling ability, which I think is something that will really help Arsenal in having a bit more variety maybe across that kind of front four as we look at it now.
I thought it was interesting because we've talked about Miedema playing that deeper role, but she was desperate for a goal. Like she was she was basically playing a forward in that match. She was not really sitting back. She was just flooding forward.
That's what Arsenal need. If they're going to play Miedema as the 10, they need her close to Blackstenius.
Yeah.
She was this game, whereas points last season when it was faltering for Arsenal, you would see Miedema picking up the ball on the halfway line. No, we don't want you there.
Yeah, but that's because it wasn't being fed. Like she was like, right, I've got to go back and get up myself. It was that kind of attitude, whereas maybe we're not going to see that this season. But I do want to say Megan Walsh, I want a hat tip to her because it could have been an awful lot.
Point.
Yeah,
gosh.
Sorry, man. Goalkeepers Union. Gosh. But she was excellent. I think Arsenal had about like 13 shots on target or something ridiculous like that. And they only scored 4. And I think a lot of that was down to her excellent keeping. And she was brilliant last season as well. So not ideal to lose 4-0. But I don't know about you. You often end up playing as a goalkeeper your best games in matches that you lose.
Yeah, massively. And I think, she kept the score reasonable. That could have been an absolute disastrous first result for Brighton. And it obviously is, but it could have been double figures. But yeah, I think that's the thing about Megan Walsh. I mean, she had an incredible season last season. And I think she sometimes gets overlooked. But I mean, it is nervy. It's the first game of the season. You know, you've been away for a bit. You come back, you know, big crowds as well present. And also you're being faced with that ridiculous little partnership there. And I think she was cool, calm, collected. I think you could hear her talking all the time to her back line, telling them what to do. And you could see the frustration in her face when that third and fourth goal were going in. She was fuming, absolutely fuming at them. And rightly so, because they just didn't pull their socks up at all. They weren't learning from any of the mistakes. But I think Rachel touching briefly on the point that you made there about the kind of, you know, you didn't feel that Arsenal, whilst firing on some cylinders, still have a lot more left in the tank. I mean, for me, I thought it was an absolutely ruthless performance. I thought in terms of the kind of diversity of how they were creating those chances, I mean, balls out wide, cutting in, balls over the top, drilled shots, long range strikes. I thought it had it all.
I just think the fact that like Caitlin Ford didn't score, Jordan Knobbs almost scored but didn't.
It took
like,
them a while to find that opener, yes, didn't it? Yeah. And I think then it felt a bit different. But when Kulberg was sent off after 7 minutes, I was like, oh, this could be eight.
Yeah.
You know, and it wasn't. And that is credit to, yeah, like Walsh made some amazing saves. But also like ultimately, I think Arsenal looked good.
Mm.
But they
totally
played
agree.
Against Brighton. A Brighton team who I think we all think could be in trouble this season with 10 players for almost the entire game. For me, I can't judge Arsenal until we've seen them play a couple
of times. That's what I mean. They were good, but I feel like they have another gear. And there were a couple of counter-attacks from Brighton where they could have gotten on the score sheet because I felt the defence switched off a
little
bit.
There was a lot of space in behind Katie McCabe. Now, I don't know if that's just because she felt like,
we'll be grand.
I'm going to ball out.
Yeah.
Which is fair enough. I can kind of understand that. But yeah, that
slight
gap between
course.
McCabe and Javiele was interesting.
Yeah. So that would be one area that they just need to. But again, like you say, it's hard to judge that when the players probably look at it, probably thought they're going to win the game anyway, and then they're up against 10. They probably maybe switched off a little bit.
So I'd have to stress the importance of, you know, how consistency, you know, consistency is key. They're going to need to be consistent for the rest of the season. Whilst you said that's a great start, obviously, we don't know how the next games are going to go. There's some big, big games coming up.
Champions League tonight.
Yeah, and just a little one tonight that you're both going to.
Ajax, yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, just a tiny little game.
Yeah, I think it'll be an interesting test for Arsenal. Ajax are a very talented team.
Yeah.
And they've got lots of players who I think could cause them problems.
Yeah, and I just can't help but think back to that Kuya game last season where they lost, didn't they? And they needed to, was that the one they lost? Or was it?
No, they lost to Hoffenheim.
Hoffenheim.
But a team with maybe, you know,
but that just makes
players.
Me think no, none of these like smaller teams, if you like, are guaranteed anymore. So that just makes me slightly nervous. And I asked Idaval afterwards, how happy is he to kind of finally get this up and running, the season up and running? And he was like, I haven't coached this team for like 4 months. And now they're back into it with WSL, Champions League, WSL, Champions League. Like it they're coming thick and
should
fast.
Should finish first next time, Jonas.
Whoa. Not for want of trying.
Savage.
So we think the game tonight is going to be a bit more of a real testament to actually the pulse of where Arsenal are at the moment. Obviously, the Brighton game, they're expected to win that. But tonight is going to be sort of a bit more of a challenge. We're hoping.
Tonight and Spurs at the Emirates.
Yeah, I mean, just that other little one.
Just the North London Derby. Like, no big deal. It's thick and fast, man. It's begun.
Easy. It's Arsenal. No fret. All right, so we have a Man United Reading, another kind of less controversial game, but also I think we're all expecting maybe a little bit more from Reading. You know, some great goals in there. I mean, you called it, Letizia.
Thank
I mean,
you.
She had a bit of a
great,
phenomenal day.
Yeah,
I mean, she is definitely one to watch. And if that wasn't apparent before, it definitely is now. I mean, she just looked so bright, so sparky, so ready to kind of make a grand entrance, and that she absolutely did.
I thought as well her link up play with her Bagé and Lucia Garcia. They look so dangerous down the right. I think for Reading, really unfortunate. Kelly Chambers touched on this after the game. She was quite frustrated with the referees. You know, something new there. but basically, we had the Mila Tizio first goal, cracker of a goal, and then there was a penalty for Russo. From where I was sitting, I thought Grace Maloney got the ball.
She did. I think she definitely got a touch on that, and she was fuming, and rightly so. That wasn't a good call.
So, you know, already before that, there'd been a shout for handball down the other end, which I think, again, on replay, it was a handball. And Kelly Chambers kind of said, you know, had that happened, that'd be potentially 1-1, kind of a different game. Instead, they went 2-0 down really early on, and they could not get a foothold in the game. Like, there was no, didn't feel like there was much of a game plan in that first half. It was balls come in, hoof it. There was no kind of, who do I pass it to? How do we play this ball out? Where can we get a counter-attack going? It just felt like it was clear the ball as much as possible. There was a little bit of that in the second half as well. Very much camped back. But they did prevent United from scoring the second half at least. But yeah, United look sharp, man. They look good.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm just going to throw it back again to my predictions because it was very Man United heavy. And that for me is like an absolute bloody coup. Like you couldn't have asked for a better start to the season, really. But to be saying that, I think we could have done a little bit better, But I think I've got to throw again to the goalkeeper thing because, I mean, we've just had a bit of an up and down roller coaster now with goalkeepers. And Maloney, whilst I do absolutely adore her, I think she's a fantastic goalkeeper, had a bit of a mare. Didn't understand what quite went on with the first goal. It kind of looped over her. She didn't really try and then sort of did a backwards roll into her own net.
Like she thought it was going over and then realised last minute it wasn't and should probably make
what
some
effort.
What was
the better mistake acting this weekend? Maloney's backward roll or Zecira Musovic's flops when she was obviously getting nowhere near the penalty?
Ooh. Gosh.
Kelly Smith was so annoyed by that. She was like, I hate when keepers just guess and go for it. Like she was like, wait and like try and get to the ball rather than just completely go in the opposite direction. I don't know what your take is on penalties. Did you guess and throw yourself or did you wait and try and...
I think it's a bit of both. Like you can only read the kind of the run up, obviously whether they're left or right footed, that affects things. And also there's like statistics involved in where they're sort of more likely to go. Like generally speaking, people shoot across their bodies. So you always sort of, I don't know, I'd always go on that side just as a kind of, but it's hard. I mean, there's so many deceptive penalties now. Thank God I don't have to do that anymore.
Credit, Stengel went the opposite way each time. Well, I mean, I don't know if that's her credit, but yeah, Musovic went the way Stengel went first time.
They were incredibly collectively cool penalties to be taken. Yeah, so I think credit to Stengel more than anything else. Yeah, but yeah, I think that was one thing I thought was quite disappointing about Reading's performance was that it just looked a bit lackluster, and I think that came from back to front. And even for the third and fourth, I think it was the third or the fourth goal, there was sort of like a looping ball to the left-hand side of Maloney, and it was just sort of like a half-assed kind of dive into the back of it. I don't know what was going on, but bless her. I mean, she did obviously after the game, she was obviously visibly very upset with things. Rach, you mentioned there that she had the tweet as well after the game saying, oh, you know, I apologise for my performance. It wasn't great, but, you know, how do things bode now for Reading? I mean, they didn't have the best season last year.
The big worry is that injury to Deanne Rose.
Yeah,
Deanne Rose is out for the season, which
I think they said they think it's her Achilles.
Really?
She's done her Achilles. Yeah. Sounds gross. She was right in front of me when she did it. There was nobody near her. She literally turned to run up the pitch and I swear I heard a pop. And she was down and you could just see her where it was almost like, why is my foot not doing what it should be doing? Like, why is it not working? That's a massive loss for them. Kelly Chambers did talk about actually having depth for the first time because last season they didn't really have any depth. They had academy players on their bench when they were playing Chelsea. So they were able to bring on Natasha Dowie for Deanne Rose, which is a good substitution, but I mean, Dowie's not going to give you the speed that Rose gives you.
She's a different player.
She is, yeah. But in the past, at least it's not bringing on an academy player. Yeah. That's what I'm thinking of for Reading. At least they've got some sort of depth. I was disappointed with their performance because it seemed, and I understand when you go a goal or two down early, that, you know, it can shake things. But we saw, and I know they didn't win, but we saw Man City go down 2-0. We saw Liverpool go down 1-0. They didn't fall apart. And Liverpool went down early 1-0. Mm. And I just feel like Reading kind of crumbled after the first and second goal and there was no coming back from it.
No, they look completely deflated and you just know exactly how the game was going to finish. There was not a part of me that thought they were even going to get one goal back. Yeah.
And it's ironic because United have traditionally been a team who have struggled with going ahead and then teams coming back and them collapsing. So if there's any kind of team at the top of the table where you think, oh, even though we've conceded some, we should still give it a go, it probably is United.
I was really impressed, actually. I was sitting there kind of watching this great performance from United and Russo and Toon linking up really well. What I touched on, Baje, Garcia, really great players. And then Nikita Paris and Leon was warming up in front of me. You've got Rachel Williams. I think she's picked up a knock, but she'll get you goals. They've recruited really well and they've got really great depth in the team. And I think that will help them as well when it comes to maintaining this level of intensity when they're playing, especially when they come up against your Chelsea's and your Arsenals. I think they look we said it before, but I think they look good.
So from that performance then, we're still keeping with our, still sticking with our guns, still keeping with our flagpoles in the sand, that they're going to be up and around the old Champions League
spot. I don't know if Jesse's heard the flagpole sand situation, but we seem to get it into every episode. When you put your flag in the sand, or put my pole, basically when you stake your claim on a point, and
maybe that's what we meant, stake the claim.
Yeah, but we seem to just get it really mixed up, and it's a
don't flag. Don't you put a flag on a hill or something?
I don't know.
You can put yours in the sand. I'll put mine on the hill and say that I think United will come third.
Okay.
All right. There we go. You've heard it here first.
I feel like we've said this every episode now.
Yeah.
You've heard it here first for the third time.
We just change it up every single week and then hope that one of our predictions is right. That's what we do up front.
That's how good we are at the old analysis. Yeah.
It's hard though, because every team just seems to be throwing a curveball. And this week
nobody expected that.
No. So, okay. Well, I think that's pretty much wrapping up the biggest games that we've seen, this big weekend, very big weekend. Obviously, I know you two are off to the big Arsenal game tonight, which would be fun. Are you going together? Yeah.
We're not.
Okay. We actually really dislike it.
Didn't even know you were coming to the Arsenal game. So.
But where are you guys going to be this weekend? What's the plan? What are we going to go and check out?
So I will be doing the North London Derby, of course, at the Emirates, which I'm really looking forward to. And there will be a special episode from that match, because there's a pre-match event that I will be hosting a panel and chatting to some people. So that's going to be a special ep, which you can look forward to. And then I am off to Leicester, I think it is, on Sunday. But you know me, I'm never 100% sure where I'm going, but I'm pretty sure it's Leicester.
All right, sweet. And what about yourself, Jesse? Where are you off to?
King's Meadow for me. Chelsea versus Manchester City. Time to actually get the season going, I think.
God, if Man City win that game, are we changing
if
sides at this point?
If Man City win that game, I will be more embarrassed than losing to Liverpool this weekend.
Oh, okay.
Bold statement.
All right, I'd probably change teams at that point. Just don a Manchester United shirt and just call it a day.
You'll just be wearing that Ajax shirt forever now.
Oh, yeah. See you in Holland.
I think I will be on Blackburn this weekend with Palace. So I'm taking that wonderful bus trip up there with all my wonderful little Palace mates. Playing an away game. Should be good fun. Should be really good fun. Hopefully we're going to bounce back from a little defeat at the weekend at Selhurst Park.
WC continues to be a bonkers league, by the way.
Yeah, there's a lot. There's a lot that's gone on in that league. Again, maybe it's just a weird weekend. I suppose the schedule's been thrown off. Like
it's what the Queen would have wanted.
Tough weekend for the nation as a whole.
Yeah. Yes, it has been.
Very tough.
It has been for the women's football nation and the royal nation as well. Yeah, what a great note to end on. A bit of a weird one. Thanks for listening to Upfront. If you've got any questions for us, hit us up on Twitter. I am at Morgie_89 or at Girls on the Ball or at Jesse JPH. We'll see you next week.
Upfront is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember. Yeah,
you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit. And he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes. I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly. Seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.